good to go?
I'm recording.
Wow. Welcome to Mustard A&A's. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
And we talk about things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest, or more accurately, capture our interest long enough for us to make a note of it.
Exactly.
Because oftentimes it's, hey, I forgot to mention this last week. Or let's discuss this thing that's 3 or 4 weeks old and not topical anymore.
I really am getting old because I have the worst short and medium-term memory.
Well, fortunately, in our defense, we don't claim to be topically relevant.
No.
We're two idiots just yakking. Okay, so I have seen a first-run movie in the theater.
Yeah? What did you go see?
I saw The Bank Job this morning with my buddy John.
Cool.
And, of course, another Mustard A&A's tradition is each of us seeing a movie 1 week apart, so one of us will talk about it 1 week, and then the other talks about it the next week. It's no doubt really entertaining for the listener.
So what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I completely agreed with your perspective from last week in that it hits all these sort of heist notes and hits them effectively, but doesn't really rise above.
Yeah.
I think that was what you were saying last week.
Basically, yeah.
I
mean, I didn't hate the thing, but I don't know. For me, it just never got much beyond it. But like I said, I completely realized, looking at Rotten Tomatoes, I was not in the most people didn't agree with me. Critics liked it.
From my perspective, it was more of, like, I didn't need it to rise. Oh, God.
You okay?
Yeah, my remote batteries are getting low, and it's, you push one button and something different happens, and I'm not used to that behavior.
Yeah, I
hear you. Anyway, I didn't need it to rise above. It was, I mean, and maybe that's just lazy expectations on my part, but I really enjoyed it. I felt it was very solid. I felt I didn't know what was going to happen, and I know it's quote unquote based on true events. That never does anything for me either way. You know, Fargo, quote unquote based on true events,
which was a joke on their part. They put based on true at the front of it. As a joke, because it was completely made up. It was not based on a single thing.
Well, I actually know someone who was upset that because they thought it was based on true events, and they found that it wasn't, and that upset them. And I mean, you know them from one of our previous job, but it that never does anything for me either way. I don't care. Apollo 13 is a good movie, whether or not it happened. The fact that it happened and it's, you know, to whatever degree it is accurate, doesn't at all affect my enjoyment of the movie.
I don't know. To me, I do. It matters to me to a certain extent. I do get caught up on that. And I'm not totally sure why, but like that movie in particular, it was very detailed and very intricate and specific. But what's weird is it's about an event that supposedly is completely covered up. So I'm not sure. So I'd like to know how exactly realistic it was and true it was, because it was a very complicated story.
I completely agree.
If they made up stuff, it was needlessly complicated. Let's put it that way. If it was absolutely true, then they did a pretty good job of following a narrative. But if it wasn't true, I was surprised at how complex it was, because the first thing I would have done if I didn't have that much of a story to go on is I would have started making it simpler.
No, I get that. It's just for me, because people tend to really get upset when their expectation about the reality is off. You know, my expectation was that this was 85% accurate, and then they find out it's 80% accurate, and they get really upset. And I just don't, it doesn't
well,
affect
it is,
me at all.
It is weird, because depending on how some movies come out, some, they come out and they're based on a true story, and they come out where they, talk about that expectation, and sometimes they undercut it, and sometimes they overplay it, and it really affects how the movie gets received. I remember when the movie Hurricane came out with Denzel Washington, and when that came out, they sort of played up the role of these Canadian lawyers in this movie. But they actually condensed a couple characters and stuff. Regardless of what happened, the movie ended up getting this really bad knock for changing history a bit in a way that almost didn't really matter, but it ended up really screwing the movie over, and they think maybe screwing over its Oscar chances and stuff and other stuff. Well, Denzel had another movie that came out just like this past year called The Great Debaters, which, even though it didn't do very well, got pretty good reviews. And literally, they changed everything about the real story. They ended up making, the big denouement of this movie was them winning this giant debate against the Harvard debate team. And in the reality, they debated UCLA. And that's like a pretty big difference and especially if you're going to win against them, among many, many other things. Yet nobody is really upset for whatever reason that they drastically changed the real story. It's just kind of weird how some movies get a huge knock for changing stuff, and they barely change something and others don't. Today on TV, I was watching one of those maddening movies of all time. It's a great movie, but it is so inaccurate in so many ways. It's Oliver Stone's JFK. And let me tell you, it's disturbing to watch a movie like that, because everything you hated when the movie came out is coming true. When it first came out, it was a brilliant, brilliantly made movie that basically posits an argument that's complete unadulterated horse crap. Just completely baloney. And when it came out, everybody's worried, oh, this is going to be what people's version of history is. That's exactly what Oliver Stone wanted. And other people go, no, it's not, or whatever. Well, here's this damn movie being shown on the History Channel, and it's making up all kinds of wild accusations. It makes this character into like a Jimmy Stewart character, this Kevin Costner character, and the real Jim Garrison was a nut, a complete, absolute nut job. And painting him in the way that they painted him in this movie and all these different things. I mean, it's a great movie, and it's also just a horrible movie, but the point is it became history for people. And that's one of the reasons why, to me, it's somewhat important that they get at least the basic facts right, because these things do have a tendency to become history for so many people.
Yeah, but then you say it was on the History Channel, but while we were waiting for the movie to start, the commercial for the next History Channel original series, Axemen, is played. And it's basic from the brilliant people who brought you Ice Road Truckers.
Ice Road Truckers, yeah.
It's loggers. And I'm thinking, it's, you know, all the sudden, when these channels suddenly start branching out into these weird areas, it's like, oh, look, we got a viewership spike. Well, wait, that's not following our mission statement. Well, who cares? We got a viewership spike.
I know. And they'll venture into aliens, and it's like, oh, no, it's the History Channel. At least have some modicum of truth, you know. It's painful. But anyway, so you like the movie, it sounds like. Was it hard to follow?
Not at all. Well, actually, I take that back. It was a little bit hard to follow in terms of some of the... Well, I don't want to give too much away. There was an aspect of it that was a little hard to follow, but not
well, I
really.
Liked how the fact that it was really complex, but I never felt particularly lost. I thought they did a good job of keeping me completely grounded.
Well, there's that. There's also things like they didn't... You know, they didn't treat the audience like it was like they were stupid. You know, they mention, you know, 5 or 6, and you need to assume that means MI5 or MI6.
Yeah.
And beyond that, you need to know what MI5 and MI6 are. Now, even if you follow James Bond, you probably have an idea. But I'd be surprised how many people who would consider themselves James Bond fans have no idea what MI5 or MI6 is. Just to get back to the broader points about enjoying the movie, I didn't know how it was going to end, and I really enjoyed that. I mean, I could see there were a number of ways it could end, It's not like, you know, aliens landed and, you know, there was, it suddenly took a left turn. But I didn't know how the various storylines were going to resolve, and it wasn't telegraphed to me. So I enjoyed that a great deal. Yeah. I thought the pacing was good. I'm really into pacing now. And I felt when it ended, it felt right. It felt okay. It felt like everything was tied up adequately, and I'm happy.
One thing that they didn't really delve into much, which is fine, but the whole point to this movie, why we hadn't heard about it, is because there's this thing that they can do in the UK, which is, I can't remember what they call it in the movie, but essentially...
Schedule D, I think?
Yeah, you can essentially do something which basically tells the press, you can't talk about this. You absolutely, there's nothing going to come out about this, and they it gets completely covered up. And first of all, I'm amazed they have something like that. And in this day and age, I'm not sure you could particularly get away with something like that. But anyway, it just sort of happened. And in the movie, I was sort of stunned in a sense to think that, why don't they do that kind of stuff more often over there? Because it almost like they let this thing go longer than it needed to go if they were going to use that admittedly totally anti free speech kind of thing to do.
Well, but, I got the gist from my read on that was that in order to enact that, they had to bring more people in and tell them why, and they were trying to avoid that.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I really enjoy Jason Statham. I mean, I like him already, but because he, you know, he's God, I don't know. I read some quick blurb, like one page interview or article with him. Either an entertainment, it was probably Entertainment Weekly, talking about how he's, you know, he's really trying to get noticed and to get, you know, more and better gigs, but he keeps taking these, you know, transporter type B movie action roles that are very shoehorning. You know, he keeps shoehorning himself into these roles, and this to me, you know, hopefully will help him, will help others see him as, you know, a serious dramatic lead and not just necessarily an action lead.
Yeah.
Because I like the guy and I don't want him to be, you know, consigned forever to this one type of role that never ends.
Yeah, I hear you.
I really enjoyed the movie. I don't know if I would buy it on DVD, but...
I would. They have good extras, particularly about the original thing, and the director, I like the director, so if he has a good commentary, I've hardly purchased anything on DVD in a long time. So
you sent me an email saying I've seen a movie and you'll never guess what it was.
Well, what do you think I saw that's in current release?
All right, I got to think for a second because I'm not really paying it. I don't know, Vantage Point. That seems like
Saw that 3 weeks ago.
Really? I don't think we talked about it.
Yeah, I think we passed that week, but I did see it.
Okay, hold on. Is this something that your dad took you to or not?
Yes. Okay. Since I'm still broke, I'll just tag along with whatever they want to see it. And it's important to note that they pretty much see every movie coming down the pike at all because they just go out and see two or three movies a week.
All right, hold on.
I saw a little movie.
Don't tell me.
Okay.
Don't tell me. Oh, what the hell? Come on, Fandango. Don't error out on me here. Nothing more exciting than listening to podcasters looking things up on their computer as they're talking.
Exactly.
Well, while I'm looking that up, let me bypass first-run movies for a moment. And I got the DVD for Sunshine last weekend.
Yep.
Which I saw it in its theatrical U.S. release.
The Neil Gaiman thing, right?
No, that's Stardust.
Oh, Stardust. Oh, Sunshine's the apocalyptic Danny Boyle thing.
I wouldn't call it apocalyptic. It's their...
Sorry, not that. Is this one where they're going to the sun or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, if they don't restart the sun, then basically the world will die. But that's... And I watched the movie again. I finished listening to the commentary this morning. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. Even more now.
Cool.
Especially listening to the commentary and listening to things that he was trying to do, you know, and saying we did this, we did that, you know, we had 20 million pounds, which is why we didn't do it like this. We did this, and it was. I think you would enjoy it just from a filmmaker's perspective. Cool. It was. It's not quite as Doug Liman Go-esque, but from the perspective of, you know, being a sort of a named director, but being constrained by this budget because they wanted to stay in England to shoot it. I really enjoyed the film, and the more I watch it, and the more I go through this DVD. It's like I'm going to my friends. Have you heard of Sunshine? Okay, I'm lending you the DVD, and you're going to watch it, and you're going to like it.
Damn it.
Anyway, I just thoroughly enjoyed it, and Fandango's not coming up, so let me see if I can find what else opened this weekend.
Well, so did you see the new Hulk trailer?
I did. I saw that yesterday.
Oh, my God.
It did nothing for me, and
I just found it so it's so depressing. Because it's not horrible, but the first of all, it's not good, and the CGI, God, it looks terrible. And the thing about it was, remember when the first Hulk was coming out, and then when it first came out, and then people claimed, oh, they saw a video, and they claimed, oh, they weren't supposed to show that, we haven't totally fixed up the CGI or whatever, and then when the movie came out, it looked no different. Well, this CGI here, it just looked... I don't know. I was surprised it didn't look good at all, and the movie doesn't look big in scope, and I'm thinking the whole point to restarting it was because they didn't like the first one, and I actually really liked the first one.
I did. I did as well.
So they're supposedly restarting this, and I was looking at this going, this doesn't look any better. I mean, on one level, they've got the Abomination, and so it's like more of a comic book, I guess, story, but I don't know. I was like... The minute it was over, I thought, boy, let me go see the new Iron Man trailer again. I need to see something exciting. You know, it was just there was nothing to this that, and I've been hearing, you're hearing these horrible reports. Anytime you sign up Ed Norton for a movie, you got to know he's going to take charge of everything, and good or bad. And apparently, right now they're really ticked off because Ed Norton, edit his way, I'm thinking, just let him do it. Just give him the movie. It's got to come up. But watching that trailer, I was like, oh, my God, this thing's like a month away? Wow.
Part of his deal in coming aboard was he had a lot of input into the script, so much so that I think he rewrote all or a portion of it.
Yeah, he
had a final, I don't know what degree he had final edit, but he had some...
Well, that's what they're talking about right now, because he's pissed off. He wants to... do something. They basically have dialed it in. He has some other stuff. And I'm of the opinion, just kind of let him go do it. Because A, you need him to promote the movie. B, if it's troubled, you can blame it on him. Because there's nothing he's going to do that's going to ruin things. And just let him do it if he's taken such involvement in it. Because he really did take involvement in it. I don't look at it as a negative. I look at him as a talented all-around person that is in certain movies can be really hard, and in certain movies be a real plus, but I'm just thinking this late in the game, they just need to get their act together. But that said, looking at that CGI and the choices they made, I was like stunned. I mean, I was stunned when you first, and I, honestly, it's like the first half second you see the Hulk full frame, and he does some weird head movement that looks so fake and so weird looking, and almost if they just cut that half second out, it would have looked just ever so slightly better. To their credit, it wasn't all this smoky, you're seeing bits and pieces teaser thing. They said, you know what, we're going to show everything, to their credit, they did that.
To me, the Hulk did not look all that much different from the last go-round.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a little bit more defined, a little bit grayer. But it didn't look that
greener,
much.
Actually.
Okay, well,
I know they had talked about the gray thing. He looked greener to me. Maybe it was the.
I saw the trailer on the streaming Yahoo site, so
yeah.
It's a little different than actually in a theater or QuickTime.
Well, I downloaded that, or I did the high def one. But either way, it just looked just. I mean, there's a lot of definition. They made him look really. Like a super weightlifter with zero body fat where you can see all the stuff, which is great, but it still looked weird. And I couldn't help but thinking, okay, they show him falling out of this helicopter And like every time I'm looking, okay, what kind of pants is he wearing? Because I know when he gets up, those pants are going to be stretched to Super Hulk size. So is he wearing stretchy pants or whatever? And I couldn't grasp that. I thought it was interesting they chose to do something which I've never seen before, and I never noticed these things, but I noticed very clearly when they're in the helicopter and he's about to fall out, they use a sound cue from Apocalypse Now, that sound that they have in the beginning of Apocalypse Now. It was clear as day. They took it straight from, you know, the Walter Murch sounds from Apocalypse Now. Other than that, nothing exceptional. I was very disappointed for a movie that I was very excited to see. The minute I heard, oh, Ed Norton's part of it, he's a comic fan, and then that came out. It's like, wow. Wow.
Yeah, I agree, Mon Frere.
So have you figured out what movie I saw last
time? 10,000 BC.
No, not even close.
Oh, really? Yep. I thought I was in the house.
No.
All right. Did it release?
Three guesses. Three guesses.
Did it release this week or last week?
No. It's been out for a little bit.
Oh, it has. Okay.
Yep.
You know what? I give up.
Okay. It's a certain movie starring Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, my God. Why would you?
I don't know. They wanted to see. Well, here's the reason I saw it. And it's kind of complex, but my uncle is a challenging individual. And I went over to their house on Friday. And for whatever reason, I got in an argument with my uncle, who was rather jerky about it. I mean, honestly, really jerky about it. But my dad was so clearly felt bad and wanted, and it really wants to amend things. I just felt really bad for my dad. My dad called me up and said, hey, you want to go see that movie tonight or today, The Fool's Thing, and go and see it? And it was so clear my dad wanted me to go do something with them in an effort to mend things that I wasn't going to say no to anything. So a movie every other time I would have said no to, I said yes. So we went and saw it. So I saw Fool's Gold, the romantic adventure comedy with Matthew McConaughey, Kate Hudson.
So, and what did you think?
It wasn't horrible. I mean, it's just, I'm not into those kinds of movies. That said, for the kind of movie it is, it's not horrible. The weird thing about it is there's such a formula, obviously, and prior to it, they showed like five previews for upcoming romantic comedies. These are the kinds of previews I never see in theaters because I'm not seeing romantic comedies.
Right.
And so consequently, I end up looking at those, and you can see, and what's weird is they lay out the entire, there's such a formula to previews. They lay out the whole movie. I think I can't even remember all of them. I do remember one starring McDreamy, whatever his name is, from Grey's Anatomy. Anyway, it's called Maid of Honor, where he loves this girl. It's his best friend, and they realize he wants to marry her, but she's getting married, and she loves him, so she asks him to be her maid of honor, kind of as a joke. And you know how the movie's all playing out and everything else. But they show every beat in the preview, every single one. It was awful. But they did show a preview for Baby Mama, the new Tina Fey movie.
Yeah, I saw a preview for that, too.
I thought, you know, I don't know, I'm not really into this kind of thing, but you can see, wow, well, it's going to be funny, and it's going to be clever, even though it's like I'm not really into pregnancy movies. But anyway, so Fool's Gold, you know, one of the things that was really annoying about it, and you start to realize the effect an editor can have on a movie, Kate Hudson, who is a good actress and was really good in, like, Almost Famous, she, like her mom, Goldie Hawn, she has a bunch of little facial expressions and tics she can use that, if used in a little bit, can go a long way in a movie. Meaning she'll, like, scrunch her nose up or she'll do some little thing. Well, in this movie, for a variety of reasons, they filmed, like, as B-roll footage, they must have filmed hundreds of little reaction shots of her doing business, you know, with her face and doing other thing. And the editor continually, you know, would cut to her doing that stuff. And I don't even remotely, and it was so annoying after a while because it was so clearly designed to be cute. And And I don't blame Kate Hudson at all. She just did whatever performance she did. But the editor, clearly in a way to punch up and make this movie more fun and more lively or whatever, would cut to these shots that after a while you just want to reach through the screen and, you know, choke her and say, stop being frickin' cute. You know, it got old right. after a while. And then, but anyway, it was just, you know, pretty basic. And I always find it funny in romantic comedies that have an adventure element where somebody has to die or somebody gets killed, how they address that, because you're talking about bringing in the element of violence and death, and how do you deal with that while making you want to care about these characters realistically, but essentially avoiding the fact that somebody has brutally died. And in this movie, they did it, you know, not particularly well. It just sort of, you know, stood there that, oh my God, a guy got killed by another guy just sort of half-heartedly, and then we're supposed to laugh about this guy and other stuff. But anyway, it looked good. They had that Alexis DeZenzia or whatever, who plays this Donald Sutherland's daughter, and she's supposed to be really dumb and dense. And she did a pretty good job about that. But the only thing, while I'm watching this movie, is the only thing I can think of is seeing her in that Bill Murray movie where she, like, walks naked in front of him. So I'm watching this movie going, and what's weird is in this movie, she's like 25. She looks like she's 13. So the whole time I'm thinking, I'm going, God dang, I'm remembering her naked in this other movie, but she looks 13 in this movie. It was, like, kind of creepy. Huh. But she was good. Kate Hudson was good. I mean, it wasn't horrible. It just hit the beats and it was over. But I was trying to think the last time I saw a stupid romantic comedy in the theaters, and I literally can't think of it. I can't even think of seeing a romantic comedy in theaters. It's got to be like a decade. You know? I guess that's what happens when you're not going out with somebody. Anyway, so I saw Fool's Gold. There you go.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Couldn't imagine wanting to see it for any other reason, except if I had been clicking by it on cable and I managed to click on one of the scenes where Kate Hudson or Alexis DeZenia is in a bikini. That's the only other reason I would have seen the movie, and even then I would have seen it for 5 minutes, you know, after they'd cut back to Matthew McConaughey. And Matthew McConaughey must be doing steroids or something, because his body is so ripped and cut. I'm serious. I look at him and I go, not overly, but he is in such good shape. And they clearly showed off, because this is a women's movie. You can see why, even now, even though he's been making movies for 15 years, and even though he's like 40 years old, he's clearly, you know, gets to make these movies because he is in such good shape. You know? But anyway,
the movie I saw a couple weeks ago, on TNT HD was The Chronicles of Riddick. Which I saw in the theater.
I know.
And I thought, you know, this might look okay in HD. And, God, it was so interesting, because they tried very hard to make an earnest movie and to sort of develop this into a franchise.
Yeah.
And, you know, they spent money on it, and the effects, you know, there's an effects budget, and they got some, you know, they've got Judi Dench, for crying out loud. You know, and Thandi Newton.
Tandy. Pronounces it Tandy.
Okay, good for her. But there are times when you're like, you go to all this effort to make a serious film, but your bad guys are called the Necromongers.
I know.
And, you know, they come from the Underverse. And
the
Underverse. It's like a Roger Corman script that didn't, like, it's like nobody read it, or nobody... I don't know. It was so funny because it's pulling in two different directions so clearly. It's like it's either going to be a B movie, or it's going to be like more of a take itself seriously sci-fi film. Like, you know, Pitch Black. I don't know if it took itself seriously, but it didn't have, you know, necromongers.
Well, the thing about that movie was it's the only movie I can remember ever where it had a video game based on it that was much more critically acclaimed than the movie.
Right.
Usually video games are embarrassingly bad, or they get such a bad rap for a variety of reasons, from Pirates of the Caribbean to Matrix. But this one, the video game, which was a bargain video game, released as a bargain video game, ended up getting near to a lot of Game of the Year awards, almost in spite of itself, well after people had completely forgot about the movie it was based on, which I thought was funny. Every once in a while you hear them talking about a sequel to Chronicles of Riddick, and then I realize, oh, I'm reading this in a video game thing. Nobody's talking about making a third of one of those movies, but a video game, they've talked about it quite a bit, because the first one was, the video game was great.
That's funny.
So so do you know what the number one movie released in the world is in 2008?
Of course not.
It's a little movie called Jumper by Doug Liman. Boy, this guy, whatever he touches turns to gold, despite the reputation. Although that said, I haven't heard any negative. I mean, admittedly, that doesn't say much, but it's already made close to $200 million worldwide and well on its way to topping out at least a quarter billion dollars. But, the guy, you'd hear those two movies, the Bourne movie and the Mr. and Mrs. Smith movie, they had such horrible reputation with those movies. I didn't hear anything about this one, but it got apparently it's a terrible movie, but my God, if I was a bank movie executive and I was bankrolling any movie Doug Liman wanted to make from here on out, I'd just say, here's the money. Go do it.
God, that's
I don't care what you do.
You know, there are times when I can see an international success. You know, you look at The Golden Compass, and it's not supposed to be a bad movie. It's just people in America weren't into it. They had fantasy fatigue, whatever. I can see that being successful elsewhere.
Yeah.
Something like this, which just seems bad. You know, from all the reviews, it just seems bad.
I have
a lot harder time understanding the European appeal of that.
Well, and also, it's like his last movie, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, it did okay in the U.S. and did huge worldwide. It made like $450 million. Well, a lot of that, obviously, even though we get kind of tired of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, particularly Brad Pitt, he's a huge star internationally.
I'm not tired of Brad Pitt.
Pardon? Well, you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. We meeting America. In other words, there'll be a movie like The Assassination of Jesse James, which literally made $2 million in the U.S., and this is a Brad Pitt movie. Well, Brad Pitt definitely means something internationally, but this movie here, Jumper, it has like Hayden Christensen in it, and Samuel Jackson sort of in it. So it's like, I don't know, it just seems kind of a surprise. Now, admittedly, we're only like 2 months into the year, but so far internationally, Jumper's number one, Cloverfield number two, 27 Dresses number three, and Rambo number four. That said, there hasn't been any of the huge blockbuster movies, so it's maybe even doubtful it'll end up even in the top 10 when the year's over. But
that's wild. We'll have to try and remember to revisit that.
Yeah. And Fool's Gold number seven. Anyway.
See, I don't think I've actually seen any other movies recently.
Well, it sounds like you didn't know I saw Vantage Point, and I saw that a couple weeks ago, and it wasn't bad.
Yeah,
it wasn't bad. They just kind of revisited stuff over and over again, and not in a hugely horrible way. It was kind of weird to see a lot of these stars, and you wonder how they pitched it to them, like Sigourney Weaver and other stuff. The one thing I think about Vantage Point was that would have made it infinitely better was had they decided to film it, like if somebody like Paul Greengrass had gotten hold of it. Because essentially what the movie is it's let's sort of examine, sort of, this one singular event that takes place over 20 minutes. Let's revisit it like six different times from different people's supposed perspective, and you'll think one thing of these people, and later something else will come up. Well, ultimately, the whole story is so damn convoluted and stupid, but what would have made it infinitely better was had they done it in a real, sort of a you are there kind of, this is a real life kind of scenario, but instead they don't. They end up like Sigourney Weaver's this director of a CNN
news van.
And honestly, Sigourney Weaver is a great actress, but it would have been infinitely better had we not even recognized these people and we just sort of felt like we were like kind of listening in on a real director. But instead it's sort of this hyped up kind of acting and just sort of ruins it, but mm-hmm. not horrible. A lot of people, you know, hated it. I think I mentioned to you before. I thought I did tell you about it. It's been, if I didn't, the thing that ruins it for me is when you have somebody laughing loudly in a theater, and then they get and then somebody else hears them laugh, and they kind of laugh at them, and then this person feels they've got permission to loudly laugh and direct the laughter of the rest of the audience, and it's like, I'm going to get up and throttle you if you don't shut the F up, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
So other than that, I haven't seen anything. Nothing. The Wire ended last week. I'm very disappointed and depressed. That is the best TV. You know, all the critics, they follow themselves saying it's the best show in the history of TV. And boy, do I not disagree. I mean, I just think it is such a great show. And it kills me it's over, but it ended in such a beautiful way. One of these days, when you get around to it and have 60 hours to commit, you should sit through the whole series, because it is so rich and so well done. But it ended just perfectly, just absolutely perfectly. And it's killing me tonight that I don't have any more Wire to watch ever.
Wow, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Dude, if I was there, I'd give you a hug.
I'm looking around. I think the new John Adams miniseries will tide me over for a little bit, but other than that, I can't for the life of me think of what the hell I'm going to watch. Hopefully Mad Men will start up production again soon.
There hasn't been a whole ton of TV. Today I watched a older Battlestar Galactica in HD on Universal High Def channel.
Oh, really?
HD. I think they're shot natively. I don't think they're upscaling like the Law and Order stuff. They look beautiful, and some of these older episodes are real gems. I mean, they're really well done. Some of them, they don't quite hold up as well, but that's, it's really enjoyable. I've been, every so often, HDNet will randomly pick up series. A while ago it was Robbery Homicide Division, and it was awesome.
God, I love that show.
It was like little mini Michael Mann movies in high def every week. But of course, it was like less than a season.
Well, that's but they never they only were they only shot like six episodes.
No, they shot I think it was a little more than that, but it wasn't much more.
Yeah, but there was a couple. I don't know how they could have sustained it, but you're right. There was like some of these. It was like you're just going, damn. I mean, just to film this must have taken forever, because this shootout rivals the shootout in Heat. I mean, it was it was incredible. Knowing how screwed up the lead actor was, what's his name?
Tom Sizemore.
Yeah, how completely messed up. You wonder if that factored into it when they were debating this and going, our lead actor is a mess, and this is not going to get easier. You know, you just wonder if he was having those issues at the time. Maybe that factored into it. But, God, at the time, I loved that series. I was like, damn, why can't this... And critics didn't really seem to like it or get upset when it was over, but I sure did. I sure liked it.
Well, the reason I bring it up is, like, one they're doing now is Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And, you go back, and it's been a couple of years now since I've really been in, really seen the show, and you revisit these things, and it holds up really well.
Absolutely.
And it's, and you go back and you see a few, and you, and especially for me, I realize, the comedy and what they're trying to do is so smart and so not dumbed down that when you step back a couple of years later and you watch some more rote comedies, and then you go back and you watch this and you realize exactly how brilliant it is and was.
An interesting series, because they've licensed it in so many different formats. When if you get Juiced or you get Hulu or you get MSN Online, every one of these, if they're going to have a place to show a series, Arrested Development's on it. And I can't help but think that it's only going to help in these efforts to try and get a movie made of this, because they're talking about making a movie. Everybody's saying it. Basically, they've got to write the thing, but every time one of the actors makes a movie, invariably an interviewer is a fan of the series, so they'll end up asking them about that, and it's pretty clear they all want to do a movie. So it's just kind of,
Well, the quote the last one I saw from Bateman was, as long as they take care of Mitchell Hurwitz, who was like the series creator. So that sort of implied that there was, like, they wouldn't, or there was some instance where the last.
And Hurwitz sort of implied prior to the writer's strike that even though I can't do any writing during this strike, it'll give me a lot of time to collect my thoughts, basically saying, in other words, he's saying he's going to start writing the script during the writer's strike, but he can't actually talk about it or do anything. So, but I haven't heard anything further about that. But, and somebody did a good post online a couple of weeks ago about things that absolutely must be in this movie. Under no circumstance can they not be in there. And it sort of reminded me about my favorite little throwaway things about them. I think my favorite of all is the lawyer, Bob Loblaw.
Yeah, it's Scott Baio.
It's such a great name, Bob Loblaw.
What? Well, and it was, if you could read Bob Loblaw's law blog.
Oh, good.
You're right. It was a brilliant series, and there was each episode was so packed with jokes, and that were not either telegraphed or dwelt on.
Yeah.
And you look at like a standard sitcom, and they would sit on the jokes to give you a chance to laugh, and to say, "Hey, dummy, we just told a joke.
And it's
You're
a
laughing,
good one,
right?
And you better recognize it." And yeah, I agree.
Anyway, that's just a random series I've been watching now and again, and just reminded of how brilliant it was. And you did bring up the fact that it's all over online, and that's I remember they made a deal, like MSN was going to have every episode online.
Yeah.
So I was working from home a couple weeks ago, and I was doing something that really required about 5% of my thinking capacity. So I thought, okay, I'll bring up, it'd be kind of fun to watch an episode of Arrested Development or have it on in the background while I'm working. So I pull it up, and first, they don't make it easy to find an episode.
No.
They have, like, reader's picks or most viewed or here's the pilot. But they didn't make it easy to, like, here's a comprehensive episode guide. So fine, I went to most viewed and I picked one.
Yep.
And they break it up into, like, the acts, the chapter acts. So I watched the first act, and then it ends, and I'm like, well, what's going on? And I can't remember if it auto went into the next act or it choked and I needed to choose the next act. But whatever happened, it started the second act of a different episode.
Ugh.
And I was irritated. And I'm flipping around. I'm trying to find what's going on. And they made it was really unpleasant. So that was unfortunate, but.
Well, I later realized why they probably bought it. It wasn't so much for MSN as to provide content for the media box on Xbox, Windows Media Player and those things, because you can easily call it up and they have TV content. And it's literally the only series you can call up, but you can watch whole thing on there. It's like a lot of things. Let's build a great tool, but not put anything into it. But speaking of a good implementation, I was one of those early invitees to Hulu. So I've been watching Hulu, which is that joint project between NBC and Fox where they have TV shows and other stuff on there. And for me, it was at least early on especially helpful because I could catch up on The Simpsons and other stuff that I was – for whatever reason, not seeing. And now that I have the TiVo Slingbox thing, it's not as big a deal. But anyway, one thing I noticed early on was they had this horrible implementation of editing out swear words. Basically, what they would do is they would put a sound over the swear word. So you'd be watching. Also, when somebody's about to somebody say the F word, you'd hear and then it would be over. And it was like, oh, my God, what are they doing? But that said, it's a beautifully designed kind of thing. It's easy to find stuff.
I heard a complaint about the screen size, the playback window.
Like 100%?
Really?
Yeah. Whoever did that is probably complaining about the wrong service, because that's not an issue here. Unlike other ones, you can easily just click on it to be full screen, and it's not this weird implementation. It doesn't send you back to the beginning or anything. It just works flawlessly. And the quality is, given the amount of bandwidth it's choking on, which is not much, it's really good. But anyway, so my point being is that they finally gone live, and it's no longer in beta and everything else. And I noticed they added a bunch of movies, and I noticed they added The Big Lebowski. So I thought, you know what? This will be funny, because The Big Lebowski has the F word in it 450 times or whatever it is. And I thought, this will be funny to go watch this movie on this and hear and see how long I can last hearing that eek sound. And to their infinite credit, they didn't have it on there, which is good. They just... It's an unedited movie, and which is good, because when you sign up for Hulu, they go through all these jumps to figure out how old you are, and it's like, if you're an adult, why would you want to watch an edited movie? And then another movie they had live was what's it called? Dream. What's the movie by Darren Aronofsky? Requiem for a Dream, which is a freaky, weird drug movie. And right. So I thought, okay, well, let's see how much editing do. And sure enough, there's Jennifer Connelly completely full frontally naked. And it's like, oh, God bless NBC and Fox for allowing me to look at naked people for free. So they didn't edit anything like that either. And the service works great. There's not that many movies on there, but they had a Akira Kurosawa's Kajimusha, which is like his 1980. It's like his second to last movie or third to last movie.
Well, I remember it was This Week in Media was talking about media players, and one of them they were complaining about the size. But the one Hulu specific thing I remember was the selection of episodes, because of the way they're doing the time frame. It's like, if you want to catch up on a series, you can't. Unless it just started. You can, like, look at episodes 5 through 12 or something.
You're exactly right. So, that's exactly and that's, right. And that... And the Hulu and NBC and CBS would say, well, guess what? So what? You know, we're giving you an option. We're letting you see the last 3 or 4, but we're not creating a service to allow you to catch up on all at once. You may have gotten used to that on NBC.com, but we're not creating that. And you know what? That's their prerogative. And the downside to that is not as many people will sit there and watch stuff. But the upside to them is that it lets them, you know, they can control it a little more, and they're encouraging you to revisit it just like regular TV. But you have to watch stuff within a month time frame, whatever. I wish it had everything. And I wish it was something like that, and it would be nice maybe if they charged like a couple dollars a month and you had more access to more. But for what it is, they make it pretty clear, it's nice. There's like 5 episodes of The Simpsons. There's more of some. What sucks is, yet again, Saturday Night Live does not – there's no place to watch full episodes of Saturday Night Live. And I rarely watch it live, and I keep forgetting to set my TiVo for it. So when I'll hear about some sketch or something, you go to the website and – their website is terrible figuring out what sketches to watch and how to figure them out. And on Hulu, it's just as bad. They don't show any full episodes. There's no place to get full episodes. It's one of the few shows out there where there's no full episodes available.
Huh.
But anyway, I think it's a good service for what it is, and it looks great, honestly. It looks really great. And I wish there were more, but then it's like it's their prerogative to show whatever they want.
I agree. I just, you know, it's, I don't want to just repeat This Week in Media, but it's, you know, God, that's just a brilliant podcast and everyone should be listening to it. Mm-hmm. You know, but they're pointing out that's not what people, you know, people want what they want. And if you're not going to give them what they want, they're going to get it. And in this case, they're giving them a lot of what they want. You're right. It's, I can't, was it Hulu? I don't know. I don't think I was in Hulu because I don't require filling out any beta paperwork. I don't think I was in Juice. Maybe I was just on a company on one of the network sites. But it's, you know, it's all an effort of how much of a barrier are you putting up and how badly do people want to see it? So if you're trying, but if you're trying to get me into your series and you don't let me catch up from the beginning, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to start watching a show at show 8 unless it's like, you know, Law and Order, and who cares where you pick it up.
Well, at least for Juiced, I mean for Hulu, you to support Alex Lindsay and them, you could totally say, damn, there's ads on here. It's not like you're giving it to me, quote, for free. You're making money by these tailored ads, so why not show everything? And I would completely agree, except for, you know, you got to wonder. I've never really heard that much about what the affiliates think about this, because so much about these technologies are screwing the affiliates. And did you hear what happened at NPR last week? The head of NPR stepped down, and this guy, who oversaw huge increases in revenue at NPR and fundamental changes in the way they did it, was so hated by the local affiliates. And I don't blame him, because all of a sudden now I can listen to every single show on NPR as a podcast, with the exception of All Things Considered Morning Edition. But everyone I can listen to as a podcast, I can find him, I can search him, and consequently, I rarely listen to the local NPR affiliate at all. Why would I turn on their car talk when I can get it earlier via podcast and listen when I want? So I honestly don't blame them for hating the guy, but he was a guy that, quote, got it, and probably to the major detriment of the local affiliates. And I think for some of these things, too, you got to wonder what the local local Fox affiliate is thinking when they're going, God, I'm just trying to make money, and you've got the entire Sarah Connor Chronicles online.
You know, I agree, and it's an issue. I don't know if I'd call it a problem, but at the same time, if the affiliate isn't offering a way to catch up either,
yeah.
So it's that. I mean, that particular argument. I mean, and maybe. Maybe Hulu or whatever, you know, offers, you know, episodes 1 through 20, but doesn't offer the new one for, you know, and I think it already doesn't for a week or something. Do you know what the delay is on new episodes showing up?
No, it's like almost, well, if I'm not mistaken, it's pretty immediate, you know.
See, I wonder how much that matters.
Well, first of all, it's pretty clear that the local affiliates have no power versus NPR, but it's also pretty clear that if the networks and others wanted to localize stuff, just like NPR, they could have. You had a great idea like 6 months ago when you were saying...
That's because I'm awesome.
Well, you were saying that, you know, there's no reason why with the NPR feeds that they couldn't just set up a system to say, you know, you go to Apple iTunes, and if you want to sign up for NPR, you go to your KUOW page and you get the KUOW Car Talk feed, and it's regular Car Talk, but they put on in the middle and towards the end, and of course you can fast forward beyond it if you want to, but they put ads or some info about KOW. They'll localize it a little, so you're getting it from your local affiliate. It wouldn't hurt anybody at all. And for these ads here, you could pretty easily through IP addresses say, okay, this guy's in Seattle, we're gonna give King 5 15-second advertisement space through here, and make them a little bit happy, and it won't really affect us at all. But they clearly aren't interested in that.
Yeah, I think you'd have to get pretty, like you said, the location matching, so the IP address would have to be pretty good.
Yeah, but Hulu, it was all designed to do that seamlessly. When you look at the ads there, I mean, the ads are extraordinarily tailored directly to you, and the more you, or they have the capability, they designed it, you know, when you sign up, you talk about certain things and other stuff, and they're going to tailor that, but they totally have the ability to tailor it, whether it's a King 5 ad or it's an ad for the Seattle Seahawks. They easily can do this very, very specific tailoring. They're doing something dumb and interesting, but they're basically saying, okay, before you watch an ad, you can click, do you want to watch a Nissan Maximum ad? Do you want to watch or whatever? So they give you the choice of whose ads you want to see sponsoring this show or whatever. So there's all kinds of things they can do. I don't think it'd be too tough, but I don't think there's any pressure or any legal obligation to do anything on behalf of the affiliate. So consequently, they're not doing it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I wish I could get my hands on is the BBC iPlayer. That's the one where you can download and watch all of the shows of the BBC. But you can only get this thing if you have a license in the UK, and they're pretty tight on it. But, man, I would love to just be able to download all of those BBC shows and watch them in all their glory as they're coming out. Not just Top Gear, but everything. Oh, mm-hmm. I'd love that, but doesn't exist. Got too tight of a grip on it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just to go back. It's if you're not if there isn't a way for me to watch to catch up from the beginning, I don't know that I care about what they're doing. There's that aspect. And then there's the aspect, I mean, just in terms of, you know, when do you transition as a viewer from getting this stuff from cable, from satellite, to the computer? And when does it make sense to make that leap? And I think about it more and more, you know, when does it make sense to cut the cord? When am I getting everything I need from the computer? But there's still a lot, and, you know, legally.
Yeah.
There's a ton of stuff on Discovery, and does Discovery put anything online? I don't even know. I've never bothered to look.
They do, and it's almost identical. Player is it has like the most recent three episodes, and then they pick. Basically, they circulate between like four shows. So there'll be like the Mythbusters, and you got like four episodes, and it's high quality, but it's a mess. It's one of those things when you try to fast forward and it screws up, because when you fast forward, it goes, oh, we better show them an ad right here. And then it'll replay a section of it, and it's better just to leave the damn thing running. But it'll be like that and What Not to Wear and something else. It's a pretty piss poor implementation, but when I had no cable or no nothing, it helped me get my Mythbusters fix at least a little bit.
Yeah, because I love a lot of these science and engineering shows. Like, you know, we're building a big dam, we're building a big bridge, we're building an aircraft carrier.
Except, of course, Smash Lab. You can't. Oh, you're talking about the God. Other ones. I hate Smash Lab, and you must hate it with me. Lately, they've been showing this ad where they're doing something, and again, they're all this faux tough, and at one point, this guy goes, "Woo! It's all about the bubbles, baby!" And, oh, man, if there's one thing indicative of what's so wholly wrong about that show, it's hearing some faux tough guy scream, "It's all about the bubbles, baby." I don't know what they were doing. They're making something, preparing to blow something up, and it referenced bubbles somehow, and apparently it was all about the bubbles, baby. But if you watch Mythbusters, you're sort of sucked into having to watch those ads. Anyway, I digress. You were talking about the mega engineering shows, which I know and love. I love that TiVo. Yeah, I have them all set up. I've got the modern marvels, the mega engineering, the mega disasters. Got them all lined up, and periodically, there's like eight of them lined up, and I'll go, do I want to watch about the history of toilets? Oh, maybe. Do I want to watch, the building of the Brooklyn Bridge? Yeah, let me watch that. And I just got them all lined up. I just love it.
Well, and it's, yeah, and to me, right now, that's valuable to me, and I love those. And I'm not sure if there's too much else. I mean, I do like random high-def stuff, and I'm not quite... I haven't futzed around with the computer connection enough to run high def out of my laptop. Mm-hmm. I've rigged it up so that it will run standard def and look pretty good, but I haven't actually run a test with 720p content through my high def connection because I'm a little nervous.
Why?
I don't know why I'm nervous. I don't want to get into it too much. It's like it's one of those things where I like the idea that it will work, rather than I don't want to face the reality that for some reason it won't work.
Yeah, they're coming.
I don't know. I'm just babbling.
They're
now.
Coming up with some new box for Slingbox that will, once you get it to your computer, you can actually throw it. Essentially, it's not even connected to a computer. You can throw it up onto a screen elsewhere. So essentially, it's not you're watching your TV remotely on a computer. You're watching your TV remotely on another TV. And when those things come out, I might get that, which will totally, it'll be bizarre because all of my TV choices will be at my dad's house. It'd be totally remote. Did you hear that Apple, they looked at the Apple patent application filing.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, you know, implementing, which it would seem so obvious, implementing DVR functionality in that. And that would it'd be like, well, of course, and finally, and it would make, you know, the Apple TV a really compelling thing. It'd be basically a TiVo.
Definitely.
So,
I was just trying to, going back to the engineering shows.
Yep.
I had mentioned this before we started recording last week, and I didn't remember to bitch about it.
What's that?
But the engineering show, and there's the names change, but whenever they show some future project, like the Freedom Ship, which is this gigantic, 20,000, 30,000
people city on a ship, and they're just going to be floating across the world.
Right. That's an example, but there's others. There's like the tunnel from New York to to Europe, the underwater
and
tunnel
the Bering,
for that.
Bering tunnel, or the bridge.
Or no, that's the bridge. Yep. Or the the new habitat city, a whole city in a skyscraper thing. Yep. There's a couple of those.
Yep.
Whenever they show those, and I love those shows, but it's like invariably whoever's putting it together has run short of material.
Yeah.
And the way they pad it out, or they've done it ahead of time, so they think we only need to come up with this much new material because we can spend 10 or 15 minutes at the end doing this what-if disaster scenario, which to some degree is valid. You've got a big, tall city on a ship, and you're like, what happens if it hits a wave, big wave or a big storm? Or, something hits the underwater tunnel.
And then they start talking about, but if an asteroid hits, and it's like, wait a second.
But the way they address the problem is so melodramatic and so specific that it's like, no, give me an engineer or a scientist saying, there's the likelihood is that this will happen or this will happen, or we just don't know. But they do this. The year is 2025. Oh, hold on. I got to turn my phone off. The year is 2025. The tunnel is built, but a submarine is approaching it. It's lost its steering. What will happen?
Yeah.
And then they go to break, and they come back, and they repeat the whole scenario again. Fortunately,
it's such a ridiculous concept that it would never happen.
Well, it's not only that, but, fortunately, it regains its steering just enough time. It touches the tunnel, but not full on. The tunnel survives. And it's so ridiculous because the whole thing is made up. There's absolutely no data to back anything up which would be valuable. And, if the answer is we haven't worked it out yet, we don't know. To me, that's just as scientifically valid. I understand it's not as exciting as a viewer, but what's funny is how that sticks out when you see four or five of these and they all follow the same ridiculous disaster scenario pattern.
Well, it's funny that when they make these, they create a structure on how they put them together, and then they're sort of screwed because they're sort of stuck into that structure. The example I'm thinking of is this show that I love, this new show called Shockwave. What a stupid name for the show! But essentially, every week they show. They show like about four or five clips of some video that you saw that was horrific, and then they and we've seen it on YouTube and other stuff, and then they show the story behind it. And they showed one this week that really, to me, was one that really severely freaked me out the first time I saw it, because it was this bomb disposal technician that was working over this containment thing, and this bomb blows up, and you see the explosion go past his face, and as he falls back just limp. And it's this very famous thing, and for me it was really traumatizing because my dad did that for a living.
Right.
And I remember thinking, wow, I mean, that's could have been, I mean, it was just a devastatingly bad thing, and for me, uniquely bad. Well, I had seen this many times. I didn't realize it happened in like 1985. Anyway, they filmed it, this series or whatever. Now, what they've done is they've decided when they do these things is they do these vignettes and they always interview people that witnessed it. And the whole story is, oh, this happened and my buddy did this. You never see the actual person happened because you never know. They might have died. And then once they show, oh, the guy was okay, then they cut to the interview of the actual person it happened to and them talking about it. Well, here's the problem. The person never dies. In every single one, the person lives. Every time. So consequently, the person who probably could provide the best insight is the person they wait till it's too late and only let them talk for like 30 seconds. They had a guy that was that had gone to jump off an airplane, and part of his flight suit got caught on this little step on the wing, and he ended up hanging off this airplane, and they ended up flying around, and they could not grab him. They realized, we've got to friggin' land with this guy hanging off one of the struts. Wait a minute.
That's Rambo 2.
It is. So the guy ended up doing a brilliant thing, and he ended up hanging around, and then when it lands, he turns around and twists, and the plane lands really slowly and on grass, and it lands, and the guy basically gets some scrapes. You know, nothing happened to the guy for everything he did, but everything that was going through his mind, they had to condense into 30 seconds everything he did during that flight, yet they kept interviewing these people that had no effect on anything. Oh, I came up with an idea. I wanted to go drive a truck out there and get him, but it turned out we couldn't do this or whatever. So in other words, they interview a guy that had a plan that they didn't even utilize, yet while this guy's up in the air doing amazing stuff, that's all left to the end. So, and it's so clearly they're beholden to this technique of interviewing people, which is kind of annoying. That said, I love that show, because every once in a while you'll see a video that you remembered seeing, and this tells you the background behind it. Just an awesome show with a stupid name, but oh, I love dumb Discovery Channel type shows like that, and that's a particularly good one.
Right on. excuse me. You know, the other thing I've noticed as you're watching a lot of these high def shows, because they're not able to sell the advertising, you see either the same commercials over and over and over, or PSAs.
Yeah, you had a great idea back when I was working at the cat shelter to put together, since I had an high-def camera, put together some PSAs and ship them off, because they need to fill that space.
Especially because we watch a lot of Food Network high-def.
Yep.
Which, God, that sounds so elitist, but there's some entertaining shows.
Yeah, I love Food Network. Food Network's great.
And they end up running these spots, and it's like an Arbor Day spot. And
oh, yeah, the Arbor Day spot. I see that everywhere. There's another one that I've been seeing. It's Keep New York City Green. Would you like to get New York City Green? I'm thinking, this isn't even a national spot, and they're running it over here. I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh,
wow.
It's this new one, and it's actually a well-designed spot. It kind of looks like a 1960s kind of Saul Bass cartoon look thing. But it's all about things you can do to improve the quality of life in New York City. It's like, what the hell? It was like, wow. I mean, they couldn't even, they're so short that they don't even have enough national PSAs, for God's sakes.
That's wild.
Yeah.
But I don't know. God, and some of these, especially on the Discovery Channel, you watch Mythbusters or whatever, and their internal ads are really high frequency.
Yeah.
Because you end up, I think what happens a lot is you end up, or at least I do, you put Mythbusters on in the background while you're doing something else.
Yep.
And they'll show three or four in a row, so you end up seeing three or four in a row.
Yep.
But because of that, you'll see 400 Smash Lab promos.
Oh, the minute I keep hearing that sound, that ding, 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 where they, I don't know how to describe it, but that start of the Smash Lab, this is our cool show, it just sends chills down my spine, because I've heard it like, you know, like you're saying, I've watched three Mythbusters in a row, and this is the 12th time I've heard this thing. It's killing me.
Yeah, it's really, really horrid.
It's interesting how they sell ads, because, you know, Comedy Central, the way they sell ads, they're sort of famous for saying, you don't buy ads for the Chappelle Show, you don't buy ads for whatever. You buy ads for a block, and we put them on all their shows. We're going to produce all our shows as a big thing, and you can't buy individual ads. So they're able to spread it out, versus other networks haven't kind of really seen that light or done it as well. So they're kind of scrambling to fill ads for each shows, and some shows they just don't get it. And others you wish they could be smart like Comedy Central, because Comedy Central is a money machine. And part of it was because they decided, you know, if we try to do it by individual shows, we're always having new shows coming up. And how are we going to convince people if we only've got a 13-show commitment to Little Bush or whatever, how can we get somebody – I mean, horrible show. But the fact is, it's part of their whole package. Nobody's going to sponsor it. Well, at one point, The Daily Show was Little Bush, and at one point this new other one, and so they're smart. They're just saying, nope, that's not the way we sell ads. You buy them, you know, as a block, and it, you know, it helps ensure a consistency to Comedy Central's product that other networks haven't seemed to be able to figure out. And I notice a lot of them are, you know, Discovery Channel, when they first came out with the bigger cable alternatives, they had like 6 Discovery show channels, like Discovery Times, Discovery Air, or whatever. And I notice nowadays there's only like 1 Discovery Channel. They went ahead and rebranded every one of those channels. I think they realized it just seems like an ugly cousin if you're going to call everything Discovery Channel. I think Discovery Times is now ID, which is Investigative Discovery, which means that now they're just buying up every true crime cast off from Court TV. Because it used to be like a joint venture between the New York Times and Discovery Channel, and they would have some interesting stuff on there, and they still do. But, but it's interesting. It's interesting how I haven't had cable for a very long time, and now all of a sudden I've got this Slingbox, and man, I am watching the craziest, crappiest stuff. I don't know what's going on with me now. I'm working like full time or more, and I'm watching more TV than ever. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. It's awful. Mostly because I can work and watch TV at the same time, so it's not a good thing.
That makes a difference.
Well, you kind of do that too, a little bit, don't
you? Well, not near as much as I used to. What I'm doing a couple of different job roles now, and I'm trying to – it goes up and down. There are weeks when I don't listen to a podcast because I'm so focused at work.
Yeah, same
and
here.
There are other weeks when I'm able to dig in. And it sucks when you get – God, especially like Major Nelson podcast, when he's cranking out 2-hour podcasts and you get behind.
Yeah.
And it's – I'm such a male completist. It's like I have to listen to them all. It's not like I can skip it.
Yeah. God, of course, I haven't listened to him in a month. You're right. You get out of the
loop. There's a point where reality has to take over, and you say, "I'm not listening to 10 hours of Larry Herb talk."
Are you are you listening to those at work, or are you listening to them on a iPod?
Listening to them on an iPod at work.
So do you? Oh, really? You don't? Okay, yeah, because your work computer, you wouldn't have that on there. Do you have attachments where you listen to it in your car, or do you have it not set up that way?
I do have the Griffin radio adapter. I don't do it during the week. I'll do that on the weekend, driving back and forth for errands and stuff. Because if it's during the week, I'm listening to, you know, Morning Edition or All Things Considered, coming or going. That's just the way it is.
I know. I've sort of now that I got the Sirius, I just don't ever listen to it. And that's the one thing I regret is I do like Morning Edition, All Things Considered. But if I have my podcast in and Howard Stern isn't on, I'm listening to Talk of the Nation or the Bryant Park Project. So I'm sort of getting that NPR feel. But anyway, I think we've talked ourselves to death, dude.
All right. Sounds good. I will say, though, let me bring up a brief video game thing. One of the penny arcades week before last had to do with Army of Two.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't think it's a 360 exclusive. I don't know. But and the comic itself had to do with fist bumping. You know, when two guys, instead of shake hands, they hit their
fists.
There's
been a lot of
other
people talking about the fist bumping and the ass grabbing and the other stuff.
And they did a whole podcast on it. But Tycho puts up this an addendum to his post for that day's strip and says, just went and got a couple of copies of Army and Two, brought them back to the office, and they have not enabled basically System Link. This is a game. The whole point of it is cooperative, two-player, multiplayer. And they did not enable you to plug in locally and play with someone locally. You can only do it over Xbox Live. And he said, I can't repeat it now because we try and keep this a clean podcast. Yeah. But he said, this is the stupidest effing thing effing ever. FFF. And the way he said it was just brilliant. But
that's the whole point of that stupid game. Well, especially if you want to do it. Oh, my God. What are they thinking?
Well, so then they do the strip on the fist pounding, and then they do a whole podcast on the game and how essentially it's just a horrible game. It's completely rote. It's these two mercenaries, but you know, Jerry and Mike, Tycho and Gabe, just loathe these characters, these abrasive, infantile frat boy getting their jollies off killing people characters. And they come up with this idea of actually it would be funny or it would be a much more compelling game if the characters were actually gay. Because then
you go through it assuming that. It's like a subtext.
Well, because then it makes more sense when you pimp out your gun with gold plating or, you know, there's shopping or there's leather. And that explains why the two guys are wearing masks. But
that's hilarious. I got to listen to that. I think it was either the Joystick Podcast or PC Gamer, but they thrashed it too. They said, you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting thought to build a game from the ground up as a two-player game. And they said, and when that thought becomes a reality, Rez, what a bad thought it is. Because they're saying the problem with it is that they end up forcing you to do all this business to justify it being two-player, and it just gets so old after all. You're doing the stupidest things over and over again just because it's two-player. And they said the best two-player experiences are things like Crackdown and Gears of War, where you can absolutely play singularly, but it's a totally fun experience where you can figure out how to make it even better two-player. And I thought that was an interesting comment. I've heard nothing good about this Army of Two, and man, have they pumped a lot of energy into putting this game out.
Well, what's funny about it is I listened to the Penny Arcade thing, and then I listened to the Major Nelson podcast, where he interviews, like, the lead developer on it, one of the developers. And it's so funny. And you feel for Major Nelson, for Larry Herb, because, you know, he's got to interview all these developers. And we've talked about it before, where I really feel for him is when he's interviewing movie tie-in games, like B-movie game. And they ask to tell me why this movie's going to be awesome. And they go through the motions. But listening to this guy talk about how awesome this Army of Two game is after having listened to the Penny Arcade podcast, they talk about how horrid this game is.
And you feel
really
bad in reality.
Funny.
Nobody sets out to make a bad game. And
while that's true, it sounds like these are really offensive characters. And it seems like, I don't know, you can make a game and have it be bad, but you purposefully chose to have these characters be offensive and have them be, you know, killing everybody, frat boy attitude, which is kind of dumbing down and probably desensitizes violence. You know, you've chosen to make those aspects of the game. And, you know, clearly they're trying to go for a specific macho vibe, but it just seems like...
Well, I'm glad I won't be buying it ever.
Yeah, I have zero interest. Absolutely, I have negative interest.
There's a bunch of stuff coming out, but since I'm still utterly broke, the only thing I am definitely going to get is that Grand Theft Auto, which is supposed to come. I mean, almost certainly they said it will be Q2 2008. So which means it will.
No, there's a date on it now.
Oh, is there an actual date? Isn't it?
Yeah,
like,
because there was an article last week. I'm surprised you didn't forward me that some analyst was saying that. It's opening before the week. Grand Theft Auto is releasing the Tuesday before Iron Man comes out in the theaters, and they were saying that Iron Man's box office is going to suffer because of it.
Oh, you know, that's true. They made that point when Halo came out. No, I didn't see that. I'd like to see that. But so Iron Man's coming out in May, right? May 12th, I think.
I think Grand Theft Auto is end of April, or it's
end of April, and then the first week of May would be Iron Man, I think, or something. So we're like less than 6 weeks away. Honest to God, I know you never got into those franchises, and maybe you'll never get into this, but some of the purely greatest, funnest gaming experiences I've ever had were those Grand Theft Auto games.
We'll have to see. I mean, it's
apparently they've implemented for the first time ever some incredibly dense, compelling multiplayer stuff. And they've never had that before, ever, but apparently a lot. So maybe there's stuff you and I can play together. But I'm telling you, I've loved these games. I've loved them. I know you liked Crackdown a lot, and it's like Crackdown only with more legitimate missions and stuff. I just love them. I cannot wait. I am excited. Hopefully I won't be disappointed, but I've never been in the past.
Yeah, we'll see.
we'll see, damn it.
We'll see. All right, so I just wanted to mention that Army of Two thing because I thought it was funny.
That was funny. I'm going to have to check that out. So you're saying that on the Penny Arcade, they had a whole podcast about it.
the last Penny Arcade podcast, downloadable content, is about Army of Two.
I will definitely have to download that because that sounds hilarious.
All right. So you guys rock at mustardaonaise.com is how you get a hold of us. And
you know what? This is like the greatest thing ever because my actual call did not hang up at any point during this call.
That's true.
Which makes editing go from an hour process to about a 10-minute process.
Plus smooth Skype today.
Absolutely.
All right. So thank you for listening. I am Matt.
And I'm Richard.
And we'll catch you next week.